Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Verde Gallery, featuring Spirits, an exhibition of works by Lisa Nelson Raby and Ann Hughes through April 9th. Also featuring Acoustic Fusion, a first and third Friday music series of live music from local musicians. Verde Gallery, a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom at 17 East Taylor, downtown Champaign. On the web at verdant-systems.com. Be inspired.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Well, spring is here, and it is a beautiful day in Champaign-Urbana. Appropriate, then, that we will talk with Chuck Voigt. He's with me here this afternoon in the studio. And in anticipation of the growing season, we're going to talk with Chuck this afternoon about gardening, urban vegetable gardening in particular. Chuck is principal research specialist in agriculture, natural resources, and environmental sciences at the University of Illinois. And he joins us from time to time to answer our questions about herbs and vegetables. Chuck is co-author with J.S. Vandermark of the book Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. The book is a publication of the Cooperative Extension Service. Well, Chuck, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
We already have a caller waiting to talk with us.
Wow, that was quick.
Okay, let's talk with our listener in Indiana, a listener in Indiana, line four. Hi.
Hello. A short preface. If I could do it, I'd have my house stuck in the middle of a wildflower acreage, and of course division rules don't allow that, but I can grow some wildflowers, so
sure.
I want to make sure I'm not being stupid. I have about 40 square feet on the south side of a house, and what I'm after is this is what I was thinking: go to the store, buy some wildflower seeds and sow them, then set back and not worry about it. Is that realistic? And if not, what do I need to do to get the kind of wildflowers that one can buy, commercially at, wherever it might be, Walmart or actually to, a place that does landscaping and sells things? Thanks a lot.
Sure. Thanks for the call.
Hmm.
Sunny location.
The problem that usually comes in with wildflower seed mixes is that the things they're calling wildflowers may or may not have anything to do with the native wildflowers around here. We get things like Dame's Rocket. That's a nice flower, but it's European and it kind of takes off and takes over. If you're talking about only 40 square feet and not 40 feet square, which would be what, 1600 square feet. If you're talking about just 40 square feet, I would probably recommend that you do a little research about what's native to your area. Look over that list and see what among those things are things that you really like, and then either through a garden center, or there are some mail order places that do prairie plants and native wildflower kinds of things. Just to cover 40 square feet would not be prohibitively expensive if you could found some place where you could get like a flat of different individual things. The other thing you have to watch out for, if you do just plug in, whatever it is, one per square foot or whatever, there's going to be openings in between, and you want to watch out that things like Canada thistle don't blow in and get started, because those are pernicious perennial weeds that would give you problems if they got started. So I lean toward not doing a wildflower seed mix. even though it looks like it's cheap, you buy a canister, you sprinkle it out there, and you stand back. Typically what happens is they'll grow, and if they're perennials, the second year they'll bloom. And then by the third year, you're getting a lot of weedy stuff coming in, and one or two of the things that were in the mix are kind of spreading around and maybe colonizing the yard beyond where you planted them. So if it really is 40 square feet, which is...
Well, that would make sense in a subdivision.
Right. A 40 square feet area, it's not going to... It shouldn't break you to buy, you know, individual plants of plants that you know you want there and then mulch around them and try not to let other things get started there. And I think... If you choose your perennials well, it could give you a nice display for years and years with pretty minimal upkeep, mainly keeping out perennial weeds.
Yeah.
And tree seedlings, which would be the other thing that like to get into perennial beds.
Yeah, if you're good at mulching around those plants, you're going to have a really nice garden. And it's about the time I would think that some organizations, like organizations interested in native plants might be having sales within the next month or so.
Yeah, I don't know any off the top of my head, but certainly, yeah, wildflower societies and those kinds of things would do that.
And I know that also, I don't know the callers in Indiana, but at the farmer's market in Urbana, once that gets going, often you'll see like the Friends of the Prairie, what the name of that group.
The Red Bison group or one of the others, yeah.
And so if the gentleman is in an area where they've got a farmer's market, they might come up with something there.
Or if he's close enough in Indiana that he doesn't mind coming over to Urbana on Saturdays starting in, what is that, June?
May, I think.
May, okay.
Late May.
And
yeah.
What else? I'm not sure how many wildflowers they'll have, but the Mom's Day Flower Show, the Hort Club, may have some things that would qualify as wildflowers that they sell in their perennial area.
And when is that?
That's, I think, the 17th and 18th.
Of May?
Of
April.
Of April. Because it's Mom's Day weekend,
right.
Not Mother's Day. Because
right.
We're out of school by Mother's Day.
Yeah. We're out of school by the second week of
May.
In the second week of May. Yeah.
Right. So that I think in the olden days when we had school... Well into June, Mom's Day weekend and Mother's Day weekend were not that different, but we had to move back to April when the whole calendar switched.
Yeah. The show is a beautiful show, too.
Well worth the trip.
Well worth the trip. Very good. Chuck Voigt, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Questions about gardening, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, when you get a day like this, you know, and if you've got the day off, you really want to get out there and get going. What should we be doing at this point, and where do we want to draw the line? Because you can go too far. You know, you get overexcited, and the weather's not really warm enough for a lot of things yet. So in terms of cleaning up the garden, you know, that kind of routine, what can we do?
Well, first of all, based on my experience the last several years, do some stretching, get yourself loosened up, and don't go out there and pull something that puts you out of commission for weeks when your mind is racing and you want to do a million things. If you haven't already done it, it's high time to go out there and clean up what was left over from last year. If you didn't have rusty asparagus and you left the tops on it, get those cut down as close to the ground as you can. And I mean that because when you go to cut this year's crop, if you have stubs there, they tend to run up under your fingernails and make you bleed. So get them cut off fairly close to the ground. If you're going to mulch it, do that. If you're in a situation where you work up around it, do that carefully. You know, any plants that were there last year, if they're plants that aren't subject to a lot of disease problems, you can compost them. If they are, then get rid of them some other way. Same thing. Weeds you probably don't want to try to compost because the weeds that were left over the winter are probably the ones that grew up and made seeds. So, again, try to get those seeds away, although most of them will have shed and be in the ground by now. What else? If you have rhubarb that you want to dig up and, uh-huh. and divide. Now would be excellent because the frost is out of the soil, so you can dig nicely, but the tops aren't growing. So dig it up, divide it, leave two or three good eyes on each division, replant it, and hopefully by the time it starts to grow, it will be rerooted in and ready to go. As you dig it, probably dig a bigger hole than you think you might have to, because rhubarb has a big fleshy root, and if you don't get down and around it well enough, you're going to chop off a lot of the root system and set it back. Usually when you replant it, you want to let it grow for a year before you do it anyway, and you don't want to set it back any more than you have to.
Okay. What about picking up the leaves, the mulch that's been on a bed? Is too soon?
Well, I would probably ask, why do you want to pick up the leaves and the mulch?
Yeah.
Usually they break down and they go into the soil and.
Well, what if you've got, you know, some sycamore leaves out there, you know, some things that haven't quite.
Well, I would say we're probably getting to the point where, yes, you could rake those off, because I think if you have bulbs or something trying to come up under them, they're going to be pretty yellow. Usually you'd want to leave them on until you're pretty sure the temperatures are not going to drop back into the teens like they've shown a tendency to up to this week, because you can freeze those tender little sprouts off and lose this year's bloom on things like flowering bulbs. You know, if you can, rake them out and then run a mulching mower over them or something and then maybe replace them, because once they're chewed up, they'll stay in place. Things can grow through them very easily. It's just when you have the sycamore leaves that are
nine or
10 inches in diameter.
Dinner plates.
Yeah, especially if you get any quantity of those, it's really hard for things to fight their way through them.
Well, even after, you know, running the lawnmower over the leaves in the fall, late in the fall, it seems that by springtime there's some leaves that have, you know, migrated.
Well, it's like they blow around all winter, and it's like a game of musical chairs. Whoever gets them last is responsible for them.
That's right. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Champaign. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, by the way. I would like to plant blueberries this year. Do you have any suggestions? I've never done it before.
The first thing I would suggest is that maybe you get a catalog that specializes in blueberries and look over the variety selections and choose that way. Too often, I think people buy blueberries based on what they can drive out and see somewhere and fall in love with that day. A blueberry plantation probably is going to bear for 20, 25 years or longer. And so you might as well choose the right varieties to start with.
Okay. Do I have to have more than one variety?
I don't know if you have to have more than one variety. Generally, you might like to have more than one variety, say an early one, a mid-season one, and a late one, so that the harvest is spread out over several weeks instead of real concentrated. Again, that's something you can tell from catalogs and
you plant these in the spring.
Yeah, you would buy dormant material and plant it in the spring would be the best way to go.
I thank you very much.
Well, I'm not really done.
Okay.
because blueberries like acid soil, the best time to work on that is before they're in the ground, because you can obviously dig in all kinds of materials. They love organic matter in the soil. So if you have compost, if you have shredded leaves, if you have any sort of good organic matter, not fresh manure or something, but good decaying organic matter, work that in. Pine needles make a great mulch. They tend to have a little bit of an acidifying effect. If you know the soil pH in your area, and chances are in this area it's going to be fairly high for blueberries, you probably want to add some sulfur or something to try to bring it down. The aluminum sulfate materials that they sell to acidify things for rhododendrons you don't want to use on blueberries, because aluminum is like death to blueberries. So don't use those materials. Use an ammonium sulfate fertilizer. Both the sulfate and the ammonium are acidifying, so that works out fairly well. So working a lot of organic matter, fertilize with things that have an acidifying effect, mulch with hopefully things that are somewhat acidifying, like oak leaves maybe and pine needles certainly. And
when can I pick my first crop?
You can pick it as soon as they bloom and set it. It usually, depending on what size you get, it'll be probably in the third season. But that's a guess, because you can buy everything from little rooted cuttings up to, you know, two or three plants that have already grown 2 or 3 years in a nursery. So it depends a little bit what you start with, but they'll normally start blooming, I would think, by about the third year, and you'll have a few, and then by the fifth or sixth year, you'll be up to where you're getting a good crop. The thing you're going to have to do then is you're going to have to fight the birds, because birds love them even more than people do.
So correct.
You may have to get netting or something to protect them at that point. But
squirrels? Are they a problem?
They might very well be.
And rabbits?
Rabbits will be a problem over the winter, chewing off the bushes. So you may want to
enclose
them with like a
wire,
like a, if you have tomato cages that open up, you could put two of those together and put them around. Just something that makes them think that they're not supposed to be in there. Just the newness of it will keep them away pretty well, unless we get a really hard winter with a lot of snow where they're really hungry.
I thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for that call. What kind of variety is there in terms of blueberry bushes, in terms of how large they get? Is there much?
You know, I'm not certain.
Yeah.
I don't know that some get really tiny. There may be some new hybrids that are a little bit more petite that would fit into a landscape setting a little bit better. And they are wonderful landscape plants. They get gorgeous red fall color.
They remind you of a burning bush. That wonderful color.
With a glossier leaf surface, so it's a more reflective red than that. That's sort of a self-generating fire red, but
and it has a lovely shape. We had one in the yard, or we had a couple in the yard. Old characters.
Right. The high bush blueberries can get 12 feet tall, maybe, as they get mature. You want to do a cane renewal system where you take out, I forget what Bob Skirvin told me. It's like a 7-year system where you let them grow for 7 years, and then the eighth year you take out the canes, so you have a whole series of canes going through at that point.
Interesting. When it comes to figuring out what your soil is, are the home test kits pretty good, or would you recommend sending a sample out?
I think for pH, the home kits probably are going to give you a pretty good idea. Just generally, you know, in the prairie part of Illinois, we have high pHs because they're very young soils with a lot of calcareous material still in them. As you get into southern Illinois and forested areas, you tend to get lower pHs. And sometimes the fertilizers that we use on farm fields, you see people spreading lime on farm fields around here. That's because they apply so much ammonium and ammonium sulfate that they actually drive down the pH. It's not because we really have like calcium and magnesium shortages in our soils. It's the materials that we add to the soil more so than what's going on in the soil. Mm-hmm. But just a basic pH test is probably the most accurate in the home test. Things like phosphorus and potassium and some of the other things are harder to do, but pH is fairly simple.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and this afternoon we're talking about gardening with Chuck Voigt. We're getting ready for the growing season. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite your questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. When will we be able to start putting some things in? Onions? And when can we do that? Pretty soon,
this
huh?
afternoon.
This afternoon, all right.
I think
right.
You could plant onion sets. You could plant onion seeds. You probably ought to plant some spinach if you like spinach at all, because March planted spinach is probably the best spinach you'll ever grow, except maybe if you plant it in October and overwinter it.
Yeah.
And it's a little, you know, we're out of, you know, we don't want to wait till October. So those things certainly, radishes you could probably do now.
Chives, that's in the onion family.
Yeah. I would think the established
now.
Chives
yeah.
should be up and showing some green.
Yeah. Garlic? Not yet.
Well, if you're going to plant garlic in the spring, now is the time, because we talked about that before. It's a fall bulb. You want to get it planted in October. You don't want to plant it even in March. But if you get into April, then you're way out of whack, and probably you're just going to get rounds that don't divide into cloves from a late spring planting, because it just doesn't have time. The day length is off. It's going to get the bulbing, you know, clove setting cue way too soon, and spring is not the time to plant garlic. But it's, again, like the spinach, you can't go back and fall plant it, and if you don't want to wait till fall to plant it, you can still, you know, get some results now, but as soon as possible. Yeah. for things like garlic and onions and
okay
and those
so
things.
Garlic, just go into go to your calendar, flip a couple pages, get to October, write garlic.
That's right. Actually, you probably should do it in September so that you get it ordered and get the seed in your hands by the 1st of October, but that's not a bad starting place.
Yeah. Speaking of ordering it, should we be finished now with our shopping from catalogs, or do we still have time?
Well, true gardeners are never finished. they may go into a lull, or they may get burned out in July, but we're never done. And there's still time. Most mail order places, especially if you call in an order or go to a website and make an order, they can get it shipped out very quickly. And for most things, there's still time to do it. So, you know, within a week or 10 days, you could have the object of your heart's desire from those pretty pictures right in your hands and ready to sow. So I think if you haven't done it, now's the time to get at those catalogs, make your decisions, and go from there.
Okay. And when it comes to starting the things that really like the warmer weather, from seed, you know, tomatoes, mm-hmm. herbs like basil, that kind of thing, when do you start those from seed?
I think we usually say something like 4 to 6 weeks ahead, unless it's, you know, something like celeriac, you know, root celery that takes forever because it's a little tiny seed. Things like tomatoes, I would say about 4 weeks, because a tomato seed comes up, it grows like crazy, and it's ready to set out. Starts to get too big if it's growing much longer than that. Peppers, probably more in the 6-7 weeks. So peppers we could sow now. Tomatoes I would hold off for another week or 10 days.
Oh, okay. That's soon, huh?
Yeah, we're getting there, because by the middle of May, we can put out frost tender things around here usually.
Okay. Yeah, I think of a Mother's Day as kind of that.
Yes.
Coast is clear. Middle of May.
Yeah, you can get fooled some years even on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
On the really tender things like eggplants, you probably want to wait to set them out until Memorial Day. But tomatoes, you can do pretty well. Even if they freeze back to the ground, often they'll branch and come up anyway. Peppers, you don't want to put out in cold, because they get stunted and may never be what they might have been.
Yeah. Let's talk about cleaning up what's in the cold frame, and starting something there. Can we do that?
Right. We're
there. Huh?
Yeah, we're past there. Probably you'd want to. Most years you'd want to get the cold frame cleaned up and ready to go, maybe in February, you know, when there's not much else to be doing. And then by early in March, certainly you cool season stuff could be growing in there. You're getting your cabbage family transplants up and going.
Yeah. Spinach, peas, again?
Yeah. If you have a big enough cold frame that you're actually going to mature them in there.
Yeah.
Spinach and peas wouldn't transplant well.
Okay.
But if you have a cold frame or even a small cold greenhouse that relies on sunshine to do it, certainly you could get those going early in March and beat the season by several weeks.
Yeah. What are you do you have anything in the plan for this growing season that you're particularly looking forward to? Trying anything new?
No. Earlier I was toying with the idea of doing an onion trial and didn't get that underway. You know, for onion transplants, you probably want to get those going January or very early February. And I didn't do that, so I'm probably back to just buying transplants like everybody else.
Yeah.
There's still time, and I may do an Indian corn trial just to keep my finger on the pulse of what's new in ornamental corns.
When you do a trial, how big a trial do you do? I know we've talked about sweet potatoes, and you did, I don't know, how many varieties that was?
44.
That's some serious sweet potato.
It was like 800 feet of row that we had
in
that.
Wow.
Fortunately, I conned some grad students into helping me dig them because they had stronger backs than mine is in these aging days.
Let's talk with another listener, caller in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Chuck. This is Peggy. I thought I'd remind you, you probably already remember, that the University Extension has this neat little book called, it's for growing small fruits, and it's circular 1343, and it just sells for $5, and she can get it at the Extension office, and in there they do list the cultivars that are good for this area.
Super.
Uh-huh. So it's circular 1343 Extension. It's just small fruits in the home garden.
Right.
Very good.
And that was a local caller, too. So they just go out to Sandy Mason's office there on, what is that, Country Fair Drive, and get fixed up right away. That sounds like a great idea. Thanks, Peggy.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hi. I've got a fig. I think it's a black fig that dies down every winter, and I want to divide it and transplant it, and I want to know when is a good time.
I would say now, while it's still dormant, would be a good time, because there's not a lot of pressure on it to get up and grow. You could do it in the fall, but that would really mess with the hardiness of the roots. So I think spring is probably your best bet. So it's well established by the time it has to go through another winter.
Well, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Other questions are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Chuck Voigt is our guest this afternoon. He's principal research specialist in agriculture, natural resources, and environmental sciences at the University of Illinois. And he joins us from time to time on the Afternoon Magazine to answer our questions about gardening, herbs, vegetables, and the occasional flowering plant question. Chuck is co-author with J.S. Vandermark of the book Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. And that book is a publication of the Cooperative Extension Service. So if you're picking up the circular 1343 on small fruits,
yeah, might as well get a copy. I'm on the cover. A man out standing in his field.
That's right.
And then inside you get to see Pepper Boy, me and a whole raft of peppers inside the front cover. So
good resource.
It is. It's the best compliment people give me about it is that they take it out in the garden and it gets dirty and the cover gets warped, and you know, it's not something that you just flop on the coffee table and forget about. It's a thing that you actually can use, which
it has information about the plants and where to place them in the landscape. It also has information about pests and
what to look for in pests. Yeah,
mm-hmm. All that kind of thing.
Seasonal ideas of, you know, cool season vegetables, when you plant them, fall garden, when do you start that? All the kinds of things we talk about here, at least with vegetables, are covered there. And it has a pretty good herb section.
Yeah, it also has a section on herbs. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit about the soil, about the pH level and that kind of thing. Let's talk about when, during the growing season, we want to fertilize or amend the soil.
Okay, well, on a vegetable garden, probably the best time is if you're going to be tilling it up or spading it up or whatever you're doing, do that at the same time so you get mixed into that first 6 inches or whatever you're spading up, so that it's not like in a clump right at the surface or, you know, buried all at 6 inches, but just intermixed. And again, now is pretty good. You don't want to put, especially nitrogen, you don't want to put on in the fall because it tends to denitrify and go away, and you don't want to pay good money for nitrogen and then turn it back into gaseous nitrogen and lose it. So in the spring, about this time when the soil temperature starts to go up, that starts to be less of an issue. And right now is not that bad a time.
Okay, let's talk with a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just have some practical questions about cultivating the soil.
Okay.
I've got an area in the back where I want to put a garden in, and it was a garden years ago, but now it's kind of overrun with plants, and I need to really dig it up and get it to where I can put the seeds in, and I don't have a cultivator. I'm just wondering, I know that there's a place called Clean Air Gardening that sells, like push mowers and electric cultivators, and would an electric be something that could handle a job like that, or should I just rent something around here?
Well, there's lots of ways to go. Since it's been neglected that long, I don't know what the size of it is, but ideally something like double digging would be good, where you actually go in and spade it up. You take the first spade depth and put it in a wheelbarrow, and then you go down another spade depth and turn that over, and then you just go next to that and flip the second spade onto the first and proceed through the length of the garden. And in that process, if it's been neglected that long, you're probably going to come upon roots of perennial weedy kinds of things, and you want to kind of sift those out and either probably want to get rid of them. You might try composting, but you probably would have a compost pile that was made up of weeds growing. That's one option. If you're looking for a quicker thing to do, then I would say rent a good tiller with some horsepower and rip into it from several different directions and several passes and do that. The hourly rate is not that great, and on most home-sized gardens, it won't take you. You can make four passes through there and only have maybe 2 to 4 hours invested in the actual machine, and that probably beats trying to buy one that size for a small project, and would probably work okay. The third option you might consider, some people would say just spread mulch over the whole thing to a depth, pull back the mulch when you want to plant something, and just let the mulch smother out everything that's trying to grow there. And depending on how much of what's there is perennial weeds and how much of it is just, you know, general weeds, that might work okay. If you've got a lot of perennial weeds, it's going to be difficult because they have those big fleshy roots that just keep pushing up shoots.
Yeah. If you did want to double dig, but you also wanted to get a quick start, would, you know, tilling that up with a rototiller, would that make the job a little easier?
It probably would, because the tiller would soften up the top
easier
one.
Easier on your back.
A very good consideration. You could till it up first, and then that would make it easier to pick that up and start the process of double digging. And then when you get all finished, you might, you know, if you're going to add any organic amendments or anything, you might want to till those in last up in the, again, back up in the top.
Yeah, good idea. And the idea of mulching it, I understand that, you know, newspaper, if you got a stack of news, you can put newspaper down, put the black plastic or some kind of material on top of that and hold it down. And
usually you wouldn't mix newspaper and black plastic.
You wouldn't? Okay.
If you're going to use newspaper, you put down several layers of newspaper and then put something on top of like hay or straw or something to hold that down. And then the newspaper will make a fair barrier. Still, if you have Canada thistles or some of the pernicious perennials, they'll shoot right up through that. But it helps if you were starting on sod, say, you put down newspapers and then a heavy layer of mulch over that. And you might pretty effectively kill out the turf grasses that were there and get by without a lot of backbreaking labor. Because the earthworms will help you till it once the sod is dead. There's lots of organic stuff in there that they like to eat, and they would do some tillage in there for you.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener in downtown Champaign, line one. Hi.
Yes, hello. I have a question. I have flower boxes because I'm downtown. I don't have a garden. And most of them are on the north side, so they don't get a lot of light. And the only herbs that I have been successful with have been a sage, a variety of sage. So I have a couple of questions. What other kind of herbs could I plant? And should I replace the soil every year in my flower boxes? And also, could I actually consume them? Because it gets pretty polluted here with all the truck traffic. So I'll hang up and hear the answer. Thank you.
Okay. You probably don't need to discard the soil every year. You might want to spruce it up. Again, if you've got a source of compost or just buy a bag of well-rotted manure or something and just spruce it up every year so that it kind of reawakens it. What grows in the shade? I would think some of the thymes might work okay in the shade. Since we're talking about a confined area, some of the mints do okay with some shade. Something like a French sorrel might work okay in a little bit of shade. Those are the things that come to mind. Unfortunately, a lot of the things we grow as herbs are from the Mediterranean, and they like to be baked on rocky hillsides. So being on the north side of a building in downtown Champaign is not their first choice.
What about rosemary? I know rosemary likes sun, but with enough light, could it?
Maybe. And I would say just keep trying things too, because you don't want to give up just without at least a trial.
Yeah.
Parsley might work okay. As to the pollution, it's a little hard to judge. Now that everything runs on unleaded gas, at least the lead the lead doesn't settle on everything like it might have used to. Actually, a little bit of sulfur pollution isn't a bad thing because it gives your plants plenty of sulfur. That would be the one pollutant that isn't necessarily bad from a plant growing situation. Because the listener sounds concerned about that, maybe there is a concern. I would say, if you have reasonably good soil in the box and do a good job of washing the plant material as you harvest it, I would think the goodness of the material and the vitamins and all the good essential oils and stuff that are in the herbs probably would offset that unless there's just some really rank something that is going on that might be a problem.
Well, if the listener decides, I'm going to play, it's really safe. What could she put in those boxes for a little lovely color there in the shade.
Well, impatiens, the begonias, the tuberous rooted begonias would have really nice flowers in their shade. Coleus, always one of my favorite, a great foliage plant. There's some pretty good shade material for flower boxes, but boy, you hate to see somebody give up on herbs to grow flowers solely. It's not, you know, it's nice to mix in some flowers sometimes for effect, but you hate to give up on herbs.
Let's talk with another listener. We're going to go next to line two, a listener in Champaign. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I was wondering, when is the best time to plant spinach, and what kind of light does it need?
Spinach right now is...
I can hardly hear.
Wow. Right now would be an excellent time to plant spinach. The soil is dried out enough so that you can work it at least... you don't have to work it a foot deep for spinach, just get it sown. Was there a part two to the question?
Yes, how much light it needs.
How much light does it need? Well, leafy vegetables don't take as much light as things that bear fruit, so you might get by with spinach on 4 to 6 hours of sun a day. Especially because spinach is growing so early in the season, a lot of its growth is going to happen before, like, deciduous trees get all leafed out. So, you know, it's kind of like some of those wildflowers that grow in the woods. They grow like crazy for a month or 6 weeks, and then when the full canopy comes in, they just die down. And it, also with spinach, within 5 or 6 weeks after you plant the seeds, you're going to harvest the spinach, and it's going to be gone anyway.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. We've got a couple minutes left in the program here this afternoon. If you'd like to join us, we can get you in. No one's waiting at the moment, so now is the time. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL. Final thoughts?
Get out there and do something. It's the weather is just too nice, and there's just a need within us, even if we live in the city, that we need to get our hands on plants and watch them grow. And it's amazing the psychological benefits, in addition to the nutritional benefits that we can do if we get out and work in our vegetable and herb gardens.
Yeah. What's the herb of the year, 2005?
It's the oreganos and marjorams.
Okay. And is there one for next year already?
Next year is Senna geraniums.
Senna geraniums. That's a nice plant, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's lots of variety, almost infinite leaf shapes, and they seem to be able to select them to smell like just about anything, although some of them seem a little fanciful. Yeah. And I think there's one that's supposed to be nutmeg, and it smells more like turpentine to me. a turpentine probably wouldn't sell as well as a nutmeg one.
Yeah. What's your recommendation for a variety of marjoram and oregano?
Well, just the sweet marjoram is very nice. If you can find it, there's a dwarf marjoram that's got the same flavor on an even smaller plant that's very nice. A good Greek oregano has that real biting flavor. If you can find it, Cretan oregano is very good. Also, it's used more in Greece than what we call Greek oregano. And then there's one called Italian that you may have to get from a mail order catalog that's actually a hybrid between the Oreganum vulgare and the Oreganum, the sweet marjoram at any rate. And so it combines some of that bite from the oregano, but it's modified by the sweetness of the marjoram. So that it's a lot of people who know it's their favorite one to cook with because it combines both things, and you don't have that in-your-face thing from the Greek, and yet it's not quite as wimpy and wispy as the sweet marjoram can be, just to have both things together.
Well, that sounds good. Well, there we'll leave it. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome. It's always a treat.
Chuck Voigt has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine, Principal Research Specialist in Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois, co-author with J.S. Vandermark of the book Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest, a publication of the Cooperative Extension Service. It is 1:51 Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Oh, actually, it's Dave Dickey today.
Okay, Dave, go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to everyone. Outside markets pressured the Chicago Board of Trade all day today. The CRB, currently at 313.45, is down 5.75 on the day, while the U.S. dollar up slightly, up 0.84 at 82.90. And that kept pressure on the markets today, and as it did, the markets throughout the day sort of drifted lower and lower as the day went on. Activity was light for much of the day. Saw a little bit of activity near the close. The technicals remain bullish to some degree, but these nearby support levels have been tested, and clearly it's potential that we might be seeing a change in the trend and maybe moving into some downtrend kind of markets. We'll talk with that about that with Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities at 6 past the hour. Let's go ahead and look at the current tick for you. May wheat, a high on the day of 355, a low of 340 and a quarter, settling 342 and a half, down 14 on the day. July, a high of 362, a low of 348, settling 351 and a quarter, down 12 and three quarters. September, a high of 364 and a half, a low of 352 and a half, settling 355 and a half, down 13 and a quarter. December, a high of 373, a low of 361, settling 363 and a half, down 11. March, a high of 377 and a half, a low of 367, settling 368 and a quarter, down 11 and a quarter on the day. May corn, a high of 217 and a half, a low of 213, settling 214 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. July, a high of 225, a low of 221, settling 222 and a half, down 5. September, a high of 231 and a quarter, a low of 227 and a half, settling 229 and a half, down 4 and 3 quarters. December corn, a high of 240, a low of 236 and a quarter, settling 238 and a half, down 4 and a half. March, a high of 245, a low of 242 and a half, settling 244 and 3 quarters, down 4. And May, a high of 248 and a half, a low of 246, settling 247 and 3 quarters, down 4 on the day. May oats, a high of 153 and a quarter, a low of 152, settling 153, down 1 and a half. July, a high of 150 and a half, a low of 148, settling 149, down 2. May beans, a high of 647, a low of 625, settling 626 and a half, down 22 and a half. July, a high of 651, a low of 629, settling 631, down 22. August, a high of 647, a low of 628, settling 628 and a half, down 22. September, a high of 634 and a half, a low of 615, settling on the low, down 25 and a half on the day. November beans, a high of 623, a low of 604 and a half, settling 606, down 20. January, a high of 624, a low of 606 and a half, settling on the low, down 20 and a half on the day. May soybean meal, a high of 190.70, a low of 185.10, settling 187.30, down 480. And July, a high of 193, a low of 187.30, settling 189.60, down 520. May soybean oil, a high of 23.68, a low of 22.49, settling 22.55, down 103. July, a high of 23.62, a low of 22.65, settling 22.75, down 98 on the day. Settlement prices are also in over on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where, unlike at the board where there was a lot of red ink, it's just the opposite on the Merc, where there was Celeste a lot of green ink.
That's right. And May pork bellies finished limit up today, up $3. Let's start with feeder cattle. March feeder cattle, 106.05, the high 105.60, the low, the settlement 106.02.5, that up 40. April 104.50, the high, the low 103.25, the settlement 104.12.5, that up 70. May 103.10, the high 101.95, the low, the settlement 102.80, that up 75. April live cattle 87.90, the high 87.30, the low, the settlement 87.85, that up 45. June 84.70, the high, the low 83.95, the settlement 84.57.5, that up 47.5. April lean hog 71.15, the high, the low 70.10, the settlement 71.05, that up 65. May 77.85, the high 77 even, the low, the final price 77.85, down 10. June 80.50, the high 78.85, the low 80.30, the settlement, that up 87.5. July 78.20, the high 77.32.5, the low for July lean hogs, the settlement 77.87.5, that up 22.5. May bellies 92.95, the high, the low 90 even, the settlement 92.95, up $3. The Dow is off 51 points at 10,579. The NASDAQ off 3 at 2005. The S&P 500 5 lower at 1184.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Marcus Pittman from Newport News, Virginia writes, Dear Dr. Science, how do you breed hamsters?
What a ridiculous question. You might as well have asked, how do you prevent ice from melting? A better question would have been, how do you stop hamsters from breeding? And of course, the answer to that would have been, to use a solution of 4 parts sodium hypofluoride to 6 parts hydrogen peroxide. Add a few drops of acetone and mix well in a blender. Feed that to the hamsters and I guarantee they'll stop doing a lot more than just breeding. Now, if you're averse to home chemistry, you might try playing Gregorian chant at a low volume and putting a high-intensity mercury vapor light in the hamster cage.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI. To purchase the Duck's Breath 30th Anniversary Show on DVD featuring Dr. Science, Randy of the Redwoods, Ian Scholes, and other classic characters, visit drscience.com.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Devro TPAC in Danville, Dick's Pharmacy, Arthur, EAGCO Incorporated, Fairmont, and Citizen Sandwich and Convenience, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL, Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois.